Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Wong et al. Titled, Sensory Nerve-Mediated and Nitric Oxide-Dependent Cutaneous Vasodilation in Normotensive and Pre-Hypertensive Non-Hispanic Blacks and Whites. This article was published July 14, 2020. Joining me today are Associate Editor Nisha Charkoudian, Lead Author Brett Wong, and Expert Anna Stanowitz. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. High blood pressure or hypertension is a leading cause of illness and death in the United States. The risk for the development of hypertension is significantly higher in African American and Black communities in the United States compared to non-Hispanic white groups. And it is often reported that the damaging effects of the high blood pressure on organs and tissues of the body are greater in Black people compared to white or Caucasian people. Because of the known racial disparities in access to healthcare, it is difficult sometimes to evaluate which aspect, whether biology or access to healthcare or other environmental factors, is responsible for the various disparities that exist. And it is very likely that these two influences often interact. Our goal in the present podcast is to gather some insight into one of the biological variables in the complexity of hypertension, which is the way in which blood flow is controlled. Dilation of blood vessels helps to increase blood flow and is an important way that the body can counteract high blood pressure. And in people with hypertension, this blood vessel dilation is often impaired. In the study by Wong and colleagues that we are discussing today, the authors set out to gain a better understanding of the physiological mechanisms of vasodilation in a group of people with pre-hypertension. Brett, could you start out by telling us what pre-hypertension means and why it's important to study? And then could you also just summarize your approach for us and the main findings of your study?
Sure. So pre-hypertension is typically a subclinical condition where it's typically not diagnosed as a condition that requires medication or intense treatment. And it's just an elevation in blood pressure above the normal limit. And when we conducted this study, pre-hypertension was developed as a systolic blood pressure between 120 and 129 millimeters of mercury, or a diastolic blood pressure between 80 and 89 millimeters of mercury. Now, interestingly, since then, the blood pressure guidelines have been revised such that pre-hypertension is now actually considered stage one hypertension. And so our interest in this stemmed from the fact that there's literature showing that Blacks and African Americans, when they are pre-hypertensive, they develop hypertension faster and earlier in life than Caucasian or white individuals. And so we were interested in determining whether pre-hypertension has adverse effects on the microvasculature and the ability of the blood vessels to vasodilate. So the way we approached this was to do a local heating protocol on the skin, which has the advantage of stimulating the sensory nerves in the skin, as well as endothelial nitric oxide synthase. And one of the key questions that I was really interested in was whether race and or blood pressure status have an effect on the sensory nerve function, because the sensory nerves are important for controlling the blood vessels in the skin, and they can also be damaged by conditions such as diabetes. And so we were interested as whether this subclinical condition could affect the sensory nerves. So by local heating the skin, we could assess that response. And what we ended up finding was that in non-Hispanic Blacks, the sensory nerve function was reduced and the microvascular nitric oxide dependent function was reduced compared to non-Hispanic whites. And one of the interesting things we found is that pre-hypertension also adversely affects the sensory nerves and the blood vessels in pre-hypertensive non-Hispanic whites. And so this was interesting because there's a lot of work from the Alexander and Kenny lab at Penn State have shown that hypertension adversely affects the sensory nerves and the blood vessels. And this is the first time we've really seen that pre-hypertension can have an adverse effect on those responses as well.
Thanks, Brett. Those are really important findings. And if I'm understanding correctly, it sounds like some of those effects that other groups have seen with hypertension are really starting much earlier than we originally thought. Is that right?
It looks like it. It's possible that if you start testing people when they're pre-hypertensive, you may not be getting the full robust response that you would typically see in somebody with low to normal blood pressure.
Right. Very interesting. And I'll switch over to you, Anna. There are clearly racial disparities in both healthcare and in the propensity for cardiovascular disease. And I'll just take a little side note here to mention that at AGP Heart, we have currently going a call for papers about racial differences and influences on cardiovascular and cerebrovascular disease. So just a little shout out to anyone listening to the podcast who might be interested in submitting. But one of the things that is challenging, I think, for us as biologists is to think about when biology and environment interact, because we know, of course, that they do. And for some groups of people, this interaction can add to the negative consequences of a particular disease or health condition. So Anna, based on your expertise and experience in this area, could you comment on how this study helps to provide insight that could be helpful in understanding racial differences in cardiovascular disease or hypertension?
Sure. So as you had just mentioned, and I think really nicely summarized, it's really important to point out that there is a wide body of literature that illustrates the connection between social and emotional stressors, which we know that Black Americans experience at much higher rates than whites, and how those affect the physiological mechanisms that underlie our health outcomes. So while this study doesn't specifically address the difference between the groups in that regard, it does kind of speak to the situation on the ground as it relates to the physiology. So this study nicely illustrates that even in the absence of overt cardiovascular disease, so these participants do not have hypertension to the point where a physician might prescribe a medication for them, but it still detects changes in the mechanisms controlling blood flow. So it speaks to how those changes are evolving and growing, leading to overt cardiovascular disease. And I think the racial differences observed in this study really challenge the idea of a one-size-fits-all approach to cardiovascular healthcare, especially preventative care. So in this case, the mechanistic insight from this study should really prompt physicians and physiologists to consider more proactive approaches to cardiovascular disease risk counseling and ways to reduce risk within these patients. We know that lifestyle approaches can really work to improve cardiovascular outcomes when we're in this early pre-hypertensive stage. And so this is the perfect time to intervene. And this study tells us what mechanisms specifically we might be interested in targeting.
Thanks, Anna. Those are really, really helpful ways to think about the data and also how they fit in a larger context. Brett, when you completed the study and you were putting the data together, what was something that you learned that either surprised you or didn't surprise you, but you thought was particularly striking in terms of healthcare decisions? As Anna was saying, hypertension and cardiovascular disease in particular are areas where lifestyle type decisions or interventions can make a big difference. If people are in one of these more higher risk groups, what are things they could do in terms of lifestyle choices, maybe to improve their vasodilator responses that might be impaired even at this early pre-hypertension stage?
One thing that's important for healthcare decisions and healthcare providers is to maybe start being a little bit more proactive in recommending lifestyle interventions, more physical activity, better diet, stress management to kind of mitigate these pre-subclinical conditions before they start manifesting as much larger and more difficult to manage conditions. We should start looking at clinical conditions as a spectrum rather than you suddenly become hypertensive and now we need to start taking action. And so we should start looking at these subclinical conditions as a chance to mitigate more adverse and detrimental effects.
Right. I think those are helpful ways to think about it. So Anna, what are other big picture aspects of the study that you felt were important?
So this kind of piggybacks on what Brett was just saying about thinking of hypertension or really any other cardiovascular disease as a spectrum. But something that really struck me in these data is that the participants are really relatively young and otherwise healthy. So when we talk about who goes to the doctor and what the physician might recommend, we need to consider that these individuals probably don't know that they are pre-hypertensive. And in this age bracket, the frequency of just general healthcare checkups might be lower. And similarly, on the other side, I think physicians and physiologists need to, consider their whole patient, but you might write someone off if they come in with subclinical or pre-hypertensive blood pressure readings if they're otherwise healthy. But these data really do suggest that what we're seeing when we're measuring blood pressure is indicative of changes that are happening at the level of the vessel. And we do need to be counseling good cardiovascular health practices, even in people who appear to be really low risk at the time.
Right. Yes. I think those are all really important points.
So Brett, as we were mentioning, a lot of young people don't necessarily go to their doctor every year. They may not know that they're pre-hypertensive. So can you specifically talk about how you found these individuals?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. How do you know that somebody has pre-hypertension? A lot of this started when I first moved to Atlanta and we started doing some pilot testing. And a lot of the people we were bringing in were 18 to 22-year-old students, and they were coming in with blood pressures in the 127 to 130 range for systolic blood pressure, maybe 80 to 90 diastolic blood pressure. And we were noticing that some of their responses to the local heating that we do were lower than what we would typically see or what we were kind of expecting. And so as I started going through some of the pilot data, we noticed that these individuals that had higher blood pressure, not necessarily hypertensive, but higher than normal blood pressure, had slightly reduced responses. And so we started testing more people. And the way we ended up recruiting people for this particular study was we just recruited non-Hispanic blacks and non-Hispanic whites, and we measured their blood pressure on a screening visit a couple different times. And then we took their blood pressure before they did their experimental test and then also during the experiment itself. And based on their screening and experimental testing day visits, we classified them as either pre-hypertensive or normotensive. And it's not the best method because we weren't doing ambulatory blood pressure, so we were not getting a full capture of their daily blood pressure. But their blood pressures were surprisingly consistent from their screening visit to their experimental day. And it was surprisingly not difficult to get pre-hypertensive young individuals, even in the non-Hispanic white population. And so I think there are a lot of people who are pre-hypertensive that just don't know it, or maybe they were told that at a physical and were never, and maybe didn't really take it seriously, or maybe just kind of forgot. And I've also been told that sometimes patients are not necessarily told that they're pre-hypertensive, even though it may be documented in their physical report.
Right. That makes sense. Anna, I wanted to ask you one more question, which has to do with the sensory nerve response that was noted in the study. Were there any other implications or interesting aspects that you noticed about that response?
Well, I think the sensory nerve component is really novel here. I think there's been a lot of work done looking at the role of nitric oxide and how nitric oxide is a really important bioassay for cardiovascular health and cardiovascular outcomes to be seen in the future. But this role of the sensory nerves in controlling blood flow, particularly in the microvasculature, is really novel and interesting that we're seeing these racial differences in the normotensive groups, but also that we're seeing this role of prehypertension in changing that level of control. So I think for future physiology studies, this is a really interesting area that, as Brett mentioned earlier, is potentially contributing not only to changes in blood flow, but also the progression of other diseases such as diabetes.
Well, I would like to thank Brett Wong and Anna Stanowitz for joining us for this AJP Heart podcast today. It's been a really interesting discussion and we really appreciate it. Kara, back to you.
Thanks for listening. Would you like to hear more? Visit the AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology homepage for our latest episodes.